February real estate activity surges 47% from January. Home sales grew 9% in February from a year ago, marking the second best February ever. 6,756 closed home sales last month came within 2% of the record set in February 2002, gaining 47% from January 2006. My goodness, who says there's a problem with real estate? Oh, wait a second. This is from Toronto. Toronto, not California. Welcome to Mark Schneidman's Radio Real Estate. Today, with the first segment from UCLA, senior economist, UCLA Anderson Forecast, Christopher Thornburg is with me today for this first segment to talk a little bit about California and the United States housing market. Welcome to Mark Schneidman's Radio Real Estate. Fourth segment, remember, weekly multiple listing update for the local market here. Our phone number. Well, let's go right to Chris. Good morning, Chris. Did you hear my introduction?
Sure did, Mark.
Perfect.
Sounds like time to move to Toronto, huh?
Yeah, or maybe 4 years ago. We will talk. First of all, can you give me, do you have a website that you want people to go to? Or?
Well, I work for the UCLA Forecast. We're based out of UCLA, of course. And if you're interested in who we are, what we do, you can always go to UCLAforecast.com.
Oh, well, that's easy enough to remember. UCLAforecast.com.
All one word. You got it.
.com. So yeah. Chris is going to talk a little bit about the bubble, why he thinks it's a bubble, defining a bubble versus an economic business stock market bubble, and some common housing myths. So you think it's a bubble?
I do. Yes, I do. And, you know, whenever you say that word bubble, people always get very tense because as soon as you think bubble, you think up and down, prices going up, then prices going down. And that is a characteristic of some bubbles, but that is not what a bubble is. When you talk about a house, when you're talking about a stock, or you're talking about a bond, you're talking about assets. And what an asset is some sort of financial device or some sort of capital good that gives you a flow of returns into the future. The value of that asset is the expectation of what those future flows will be. So, for example, if you own a stock of a pharmaceutical company and the company comes up with a great idea for a new, say, cancer-fighting drug, the stock price might soar up. And then they find out it's not as effective as they thought it was going to be, and the stock price will go down. That's not a bubble. That's simply a reasonable expectation of increased future profits and then a reasonable expectation that those profits aren't going to emerge, hence the stock price goes up and down. When you talk about a bubble, what you're functionally talking about is when the market price of an asset is completely misaligned with what the fundamentals say they could possibly be. The example I like to use is Amazon.com at $200 a share. A bright economist a number of years ago, when Amazon.com was in those very, very high realms, pointed out that had Amazon.com captured 100% of the DVD, the CD, and the book market, they would never have made enough profit and in the future in order to justify that particular market capitalization embodied in a $200 per price share. And that's what a bubble is. It's when the market seems to completely forget about anything having to do with fundamentals and is focusing solely on expected appreciation.
Now, repeat what you said, Mark. When the market price is out of balance with...
The fundamentals.
Okay, now tie that into...
A house. Okay, quite simple. When you buy a house, it becomes complicated. A lot of people don't think about this, but when you buy a house, what you're functionally buying is a stream of rent today and into the future. That's what you're buying is that flow of returns. Now, there's lots of issues there. There's lots of things you got to worry about. For example, there's the issue with taxes and issue with interest rates and everything else. But that's functionally what buying a house is.
And you're distinguishing that, of course, from a developer. You're saying the person who's going to live in the house is buying a stream of rent.
That's true, because if you don't, in economics, we have a term, we call it opportunity cost. If you aren't living in the house, you can rent it out to somebody else. By living in that house, you're functionally giving up the potential return you could get from renting it to somebody else. So even under those particular circumstances, there was a... I've lost my train of thought. It happens on the radio once in a while, doesn't it?
That's okay. Who am I talking with? I'm sorry. Who is this?
Where am I? So anyway, again.
Well, I derailed you because you were on this role about buying a house. You're buying a stream of rent.
Right, buying a stream of rent. So the whole idea there that, of course, that you know, this house is going to give you this flow of returns in the future. So whenever people say, what are the drivers of the fundamental price of a house? The really answer is two things. What is future rental growth looking like in your particular community? What's it now and what's it in the future? That's a big issue. And then the other issue is interest rates. Because as interest rates fall, when interest rates fall, those rental values become more valuable in the future. The discount rate falls is a way of thinking about it. Hence, the price of a house today goes up. And vice versa, if the interest rate goes up, then the price of a house today goes down on the opposite track. Now, the key here is when you start looking at markets in California, you know, late 90s, big run-up in rents, the change in the tax code, that all added to the fundamental value in the house. Of course, in 2001, when the economy started softening, rents also started softening significantly. But at that particular point in time, interest rates started falling. And when that fall in the interest rates, that drove housing prices up. And really, I was quite comfortable where the housing prices were at the beginning of 2003 in California. But that's when the problems began. Because in the beginning of 2003, all the fundamentals said, that's it. There should be no more appreciation or very little appreciation. Interest rates had bottomed out. And, of course, rental rates continued to be weak. In fact, rental rates just started growing slightly over the last 6 months, 8 months or so in the state of California. So everything said, look, at this point in time, the market should cool off. And it didn't. It accelerated. You saw faster price appreciation between 2003 and 2006 than you had over the previous 5 years. And that's exactly symptomatic of a bubble. You have a circumstance in which the market sees rapid appreciation when there's absolutely no reason for it.
Now, when we start talking about the reason for it, mm-hmm. we can get into a couple of things. It brings to mind, first of all, there was a guy out of Ohio, I think, who came up with these calculations to show, I think, why the market price is out of balance with the fundamentals. And he was basically looking at California coastal properties and saying, well, the prices should really be this. Now, I don't know if he was, you know, using your school of thought here, but
you got to be real careful because, you know, I have a little spiel I give when I talk about sort of common housing myths, you know, things that people are saying out there, which just aren't true. Here's one of the myths. One of the myths is inventory levels are low, therefore the market is fine. The fact that there's low inventory levels is really a symptom of the bubble, not the driver of price appreciation. What happens in these kind of markets is this, is you have a circumstance where people don't think about fundamentals, they think about trends. They saw good appreciation between 2000 and 2003, and they thought, gee, this is a great asset. I got to get me some of this. This is free money. And people rush into the market, and lo and behold, because they rush into the market, they create a self-fulfilling prophecy. By rushing into the market, prices go up, causing more people to want to get the free money, causing more people to rush into the market, and prices go up again. And you have this kind of cyclical phenomenon where people are in a frenzy to buy houses because they think it's a guaranteed return, causing prices to go up and so on and so forth. And it feeds on itself and feeds on itself. The problem is at some point in time, it's going to run out of steam. At some point in time, people are going to realize that the prices are totally out of whack and it just doesn't make any sense. You can rent so much cheaper than you could possibly buy an equivalent place. Or equivalently, the capital markets finally say, look, I don't care what you say. I'm not going to give you an $800,000 mortgage for a 600-square-foot condo in Santa Monica based on $50,000 income. I'm not going to give you that money. Any of these things can cause this bubble to end. And, of course, when it does end, it gets pretty ugly out there. It definitely gets pretty ugly.
You started saying low inventory is a symptom of a bubble.
Symptom of a bubble, exactly, because everybody's in that frenzy trying to rush in and get some of that free money.
And now we've been talking on this program for the last 7 years, but specifically the last 6 months, mm-hmm. how our inventory is increasing and the number of pendings and the number of sales, number of solds are down and the number of pendings are maybe flat compared to last year at this time, but the inventory is going up.
Right. All symptomatic of the end of a bubble.
Do you have any, you put any credence in that algebraic the equation where you take the inventory, the current active inventory, and divide it by maybe the number of solds in the last 30 days or the number of listings that went into escrow, the number of pendings,
to give
you the number of months it would take.
That's really a kind of a nonsensical
situation. I mean, there's a lot of factors that would change that, given if there no new listings came on the market and nothing happened.
Right.
That's the number of months of inventory. I mean, to me, it's fraught with problems. But if you compare, compare it to last year at this time versus this year, and you see now it's 6 months versus last year 3 months, you still don't find much value in that.
No, because again, what you're talking about, what you're measuring there, is exactly what the bubble is. I mean, that's that frenzy, that rush to buy every property available, is exactly what the bubble is defined by. So you're talking about a measure that tells me simply the level of the frenzy out there. It doesn't tell me that the market's fine. It tells me that the market's in a problem state because the frenzy's so high.
What you also start up?
Well, you started to say something which I thought was kind of interesting. You mentioned that this whole concept of what about the border areas? What about the areas along the water? Aren't they different? Isn't Santa Barbara, because it's basically construction constrained, isn't Santa Barbara kind of unique? That's another one of these basic mythologies.
You started your talk, and you gave an example of Orange County versus two other areas down there.
Yeah, well, exactly.
What were the three?
I think they're called Los Angeles and Inland Empire.
And versus Orange County, and everyone in Orange County. Everyone took note that you used this example of Orange County, claiming they were different, and they're really not different.
Exactly.
But everyone read between the lines, Chris.
Yeah.
You were really talking about us in Santa Barbara.
I sure was.
But you just didn't want to come out and say it.
I didn't want
to. So would you just come out and say it right now? Just go ahead and just tell me.
Santa Barbara is not different. And let me explain why. Different regions will have different prices. There's no doubt about it. It clearly is more desirable, say, to live in along the coast in Orange County than inland Orange County. It's more desirable to live in inland Orange County than it is, say, to live in Riverside. There's no doubt about that. But the gap between housing prices in these different areas reflects the different level of desirability in the different areas. But on the margin, and that's where the important differences lie, on the margin, these places all have to be sort of equally attractive. The fact is, if someone has a choice to live in Santa Barbara or live in Santa Maria or live in Goleta or even, God forbid, live in Ventura, people have this choice. And the choice is based on two things. What's the relative price in the two spots and sort of what's the cost of commuting? How bad is the 101, so to speak? What time in the morning do I have to get up and go from point A to point B? What happens here is this, is the reality is let's say that overheated market in Santa Maria and that overheated market in Goleta starts to collapse, and you see prices, say, flattening or even starting to go down a little bit in those areas. Well, it can't possibly be that you're going to continue to see higher rates of appreciation in Santa Barbara, because people are going to look at that choice and say, look, I'm willing to go to Santa Maria now. I'm willing to go to Goleta because the price differences become too wide for me to ignore. And so people start moving to those areas. And as a result, of course, what you end up doing is you end up pulling pressure off the Santa Barbara market, and Santa Barbara feels it indirectly. So even though there is a constraint on building in Santa Barbara because of the zoning laws that are all, as you know, pretty crazy and pretty restrictive, but nonetheless,
and lately,
the rest of the county can build.
And lately, pretty capricious.
And pretty capricious, exactly.
Let me tell you what I think is true about what you just said, and gives some fuel to what you just said, or credence. The Lompoc market, when Mark Schneep spoke last week, well, he might have been smoking as well, he was talking about Lompoc and the Lompoc run-up, and mm-hmm. they having a huge burst. And so the outlying areas have been affected by Santa Barbara's hot market. But I don't know if I've seen the outlying areas' growth affect and diminish Santa Barbara's appreciation in the last 5 years. I haven't seen them have an impact where they're, where they're drawing people away. There just seems to be too many people wanting to come to the United States, to California, and then again to the coast. It just seems to be an unending supply.
Nobody has popped. So I'm not sure exactly what Mark is talking about, but nobody in California has popped yet. The markets are starting to soften. You're seeing them start to come down the backside. I don't know of any particular pockets of, shall we say, collapsing real estate markets. These markets, the aggregate trends, that is to say, the trends for the entire Southern California region, the kind of ups and downs in that aggregate trend, swamp any kind of interregional variation. That's true in the long run. It's true in the short run.
What do you mean by, rephrase that?
Well, what I mean by this is, if you go back, say, and look at housing prices between, say, 1990 and 1994, right? That was the last big real estate slump, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, there was some minute differences across areas. Some areas did a little better. Some areas did a little worse. That is true that there were some small differences across regions, but the overall trends in the markets, the overall ups and downs in the markets, swamp that interregional difference. That is to say that the aggregate decline, the 25% decline in real estate prices we saw between 1990 and 1994 was much, much larger than any kind of interregional difference. There was no neighborhood, there was no area in Southern California that was immune to that slowdown. Some did a little better, some did a little worse, but overall, every place was impacted quite severely by the slowdown in real estate.
Now,
there are no safe havens, let me put it that way.
Right. Now, getting back to this, what we've heard a lot, and we've heard it from the California Association of Realtors economists, Leslie Appleton Young, and echoed by Mark Schneep, is that it's a soft landing.
Well, it depends on what you mean by soft. Okay, it is true that historically speaking, it's pretty unusual for the nominal price of real estate to go down. So I think that's what everybody means when they say soft landing. We don't expect a substantial decline in the price of real estate. And I agree with that 100%. That's historically true. Even in the worst case scenarios, say, for example, if you go to Japan and looked at what happened in Japan after that late 80s run-up, they basically saw nominal real estate prices fall for something on the order of 12 years by about 1% a year. So that's like a worst case scenario, and even there, prices didn't fall substantially. On the other hand, and this is the key, when you say soft landing, everybody assumes a soft landing on the price side of the equation, but there's a lot of other parts of the market that are going to do for a hard landing, and that would be, for example, market activity. And all those new real estate agents are suddenly going to find that their source of business, their source of income is going to dry up. Same with mortgage brokers. And, of course, on the third part of the fence is the fact that people have been spending a lot of money, both in the U.S. and in California, based on how much their house is worth. People have been in kind of a buying binge. And what's going to happen is when that market cools off, you're going to suddenly find people realizing that their house isn't going to pay for their retirement. It's not going to pay for their kids' college education. They have to do it the old-fashioned way. They're going to have to save.
Or the third BMW, as it was one of your examples.
Or the third BMW, exactly. And what that means, of course, is that there's a spillover to the rest of the economy, and that spillover can be very, very ugly. And that's what we're worried about, is the spillover effects. What's going to happen to the rest
yet,
of the economy?
Okay, so now you're getting really, dreary. I mean, you're like the weather outside now. It's raining and it's cloudy.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Now you're just getting me really depressed, and yet... You did end your talk with that you predicted that the price of your home today will basically be that same price in the year 2011.
Right. So, but again, same price nominally, you're still going to lose inflation on it every year.
Right.
So,
right.
Again, here's another one of those housing myths. The prices of homes have never the price of a home in the U.S. has never fallen in aggregate. That's simply not true. When you take into account when you look at the real price of homes, there's been plenty of periods, both in California and the U.S. overall, in which housing prices have fallen. They just do so at a very slow pace. You see nominal prices basically being flat, but that means, of course, because of the process of inflation, in real terms, the price of those homes is falling. Let me ask you a question. We can wrap up with this. Here's a little quiz for you. What is the average annual rate of real appreciation of a home and a house over the last 100 years? The average annual increase in the price of a home over, say, the last 70 years or 80 years in the U.S. economy.
3.5%.
In real terms now, inflation adjusted.
Inflation adjusted?
Yeah.
8.5%.
8.5%, you went up.
I don't know. I'm just throwing out completely lost. I have no idea what the hell you're talking about.
I won't keep you hanging.
So I was better with 3.5%.
You were still way too high. The answer is zero. In the U.S. economy over the last 50, 60 years, or whatever you want to start with, in current terms, the average price of a house in the U.S. has basically been between $100,000 and $110,000 in current prices for the last 50 years. And the reason for that, of course, is that, again, houses tend not to appreciate. Houses give their financial returns in the form of those rents. They don't give it in terms of overall appreciation of the underlying asset. And people forget that. They forget that. They forget what the true value of a house is.
Chris Thornburg, UCLA senior, Anderson Forecast Project. Appreciate you coming on.
Anytime.
I'll have to take that little snippet and send it to the National Association of Realtors. I went to the California Association of Realtors, and they had this big chart showing why real estate has never gone down.
Yeah, and if you inflation adjust it, it's a much different picture.
Inflation adjusted. All right. Well, there's always a little caveat. I'll end with this. Uh-huh. Santa Barbara is different. Since I'll have the last word, I'll just end with that.
Well,
the problem is the stream of rent and all the theory is you get too many people coming into town who are just paying cash, buying two homes at a time in Santa Barbara. It's Santa Barbara is different. Chris, you're the best. I appreciate you taking so much time and chatting with us.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Chris Thornburg, UCLA Anderson Forecast. And if you want to check out their website, it's UCLAforecast.com. Mark Schneidman's Radio Real Estate, our phone number 564-1290, 564-1290. We'll come back. We'll take a break. We'll come back. And any feedback on this guest, you're welcome to call in. And I also had read an interesting op-ed piece by I cut it out and put it here somewhere. Randy Alcorn had some interesting things to say about housing and kind of dovetailing in. If you read that article about people coming here and building, 564-1290 is the number. He ended his column with providing a home here for everyone who wants one will only make this extraordinary place dismally ordinary forever. Mark Schneidman's Radio Real Estate. Stay tuned. You'll be right back.